Hey, Max.
Hey, Ed.
Can you believe it's been a year?
Not really. Our first episode was released April 8th of 2023.
Yeah, the top story in that episode was about manufacturers in Petoskey who were excited about training opportunities for their workers, but said what they really needed was help with childcare. That ended up actually becoming like a reporting series that we did later.
And another story in that episode was about Michigan tribes voicing their opposition to the expansion of Camp Grayling. An expansion the state has since approved, although not quite as big as what was asked for.
Right. And there were stories about the termination of the city manager in Traverse City. A former speaker of the state house had pleaded guilty that week to bribery charges. And that was also the week Governor Whitmer signed a repeal of Michigan's 1931 abortion ban, something, an issue that obviously is still in the news today.
And of course, there was the very first Sonic send-off. We hadn't quite come up with that title yet, but our very first Sonic send-off, the Spring Peepers.
Yeah, we hoofed it into the woods behind the station to get that sound. I remember trying not to get microphone cables snagged on trees.
It's been a good year, and we've had a lot of great episodes. We've got another one for you today, which we've decided to co-host.
Yeah, we're going to hear about a new film and about pro wrestling in Kalkaska. So, Max, you want to fire off that theme song and get us started?
Here we go.
This is the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco.
And I'm Max Copeland. As promised, we hear from two Traverse City filmmakers whose project focuses on a beautiful old theater in Marquette.
We'll also hear about how the pro wrestling scene in Kalkaska is not just entertainment, but also a way to build community.
Yeah, but we're starting today with a short but noteworthy story in the news this week, which has to do with hunting coyotes. Now, you can hunt coyotes here in Michigan, but recently the State Natural Resources Commission voted to bring back what's called a quiet period, 3 months a year where hunters cannot target coyotes. Some conservation groups are upset about that, and IPR's Michael Livingston explains they are challenging the decision in court.
A year-round coyote season was introduced in 2016, amid concerns they were a growing nuisance to property owners and having an adverse effect on deer populations. But 8 years later, the Natural Resources Commission says the move didn't really help solve those issues. Some new concerns were raised that hunting pregnant mothers and pups did not fall under fair chase ethics. NRC Chair Tom Baird spoke in support of bringing back the quiet period to give the coyote pups more time to grow.
So there's no effect on population, a minor reduction in opportunity. We don't eat coyotes. We can't use the fur from that period of time. Nuisance hunting is still allowed on private property. There's very little reason, biologically speaking, to continue the hunt during the quiet period.
The decision passed in a 4-2 vote, but came with opposition. The Michigan United Conservation Clubs announced it's filing a lawsuit, saying the decision came without enough scientific evidence. Amy Trotter spearheads the group. She says she's concerned that the NRC relied too much on public comment from non-hunters.
MUCC and all of those other organizations and individuals that had testified really want to provide the maximum amount of opportunity to harvest a coyote, as long as it is, again, done sustainably and not at the detriment of the population.
The Michigan Trappers and Predator Callers filed a similar suit in Mackinac County. Hunters will still be able to go after coyotes for the other 9 months of the year and kill them on private property if they pose a threat.
That report came from IPR's Michael Livingston.
The new film, Marquee Town, places us right in the middle of downtown Marquette, Michigan. Now, there were two cinemas in the middle of this Upper Peninsula city, including one called The Nordic. In this film, we learn about The Nordic and about a man who grew up in Marquette and tries to bring the old art house cinema back to life. The film was written and directed by Joe Beyer and Jordan Anderson. Joe Beyer has done arts commentaries for Interlochen Public Radio. You've heard him on this podcast before. And both of them are joining us to talk about the film. Hey, guys.
Howdy.
Hello.
All right, Joe, let's start with you. Tell us about the Nordic Theater. This thing opened in the 1930s.
Yeah, every theater has a unique story when you start digging deep enough, but this one seemed particularly fraught with curiosities and characters and a kind of marquee mafia of people who were involved in making it happen. And at the time in downtown Marquette, this theater really should never have existed because it was kind of a technological wonder in 1936.
Can you describe physically what it looks like? Because you've made a film about it, obviously, but here we are in an audible medium, and it is a stunning, especially the interior, it's a stunning building.
Well, thank you for saying that. We thought so too, which is why we spent so much time thinking about it. But it's in this streamlined, modern architectural style, which was very innovative in its use of materials and also sort of tried to capture this modern world coming to life. So speed and motion in all of the details. And so it had this wraparound marquee that originally was red and blue with 15,000 watts of lights lighting it up. And, you know, it became known for the adult edge in the 60s with that great era of American independent cinema and all of the big name directors that we know now, starting with their small, scrappy, very uniquely American films. And so the hero of our story saw that. And as a teenager, just felt this desire to experience it, like any teenager wanting to experience, you know, adulthood. And for him, it was wrapped up in that theater. And that's sort of something that Jordan and I were able to really connect on personally.
It closed in the 1990s.
In 1994, like so many other single screen theaters in the state, in the country, we started to see as the larger multiplexes were coming in, and it was, you know, just trying to be more economical to, you know, we'll get 10 screens in here. We can show more pictures, you know, more turnaround, more butts and seats. Mm-hmm. And it became economically infeasible to be able to have a theater like that. And so the Nordic closed.
But it became a bookstore for a while.
It did, yes. So after that, it was sold, and all of these, the beautiful architecture, it was all covered up, this incredible curved ceiling, special acoustics. A drop ceiling was put in place. The marquee gone from the front of the building, and it became just kind of like a memory, but a memory that you're maybe a memory of a dream where you go downtown and you're like, was this even here?
Yeah. The town I grew up in had a two-screen cinema, and it was closed. They were going to try to save it, and now it's a vacant lot. And I have the same feeling, which is when I go back to my hometown, like I see my sixth grade friends standing in front of the box office, and, you know, I see my friend Eric with his girlfriend who, you know, was his girlfriend for like 5 minutes because it was sixth grade, right? And it's
by the
memories.
End of the movie, there was another girlfriend. So.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like looking at ghosts.
Yeah.
Almost. It is like looking at ghosts because this is, you know, it's like Joe said about our hero, Bernie Rosendahl. It's about the movies, but it was about coming of age. It was about so much more than just, it's about what going to the movies means to us, to a community, and to that shared collective memory.
So it was a change in the industry that sort of did in the Nordic Theater as a theater. It becomes a bookstore. Another change, you know, I presume the prevalence of Amazon, things like that, sort of dooms book world. It closes, and along comes the hero of the story, Bernie.
Yeah, that's in about 2018 when Bookworld closed in the face of the Amazon crisis. And it's just one of many booms and busts in technology. And it echoes what happened with the movie theaters themselves. So Bernie rallies. He's now an adult living in the Detroit area when this happens. And he rallies to see what he can do personally to try and convince the community to restore it. And it doesn't go exactly the way that he expects. Like so many dreams so many of us have, it doesn't work out.
This will be easy. What could possibly be difficult about this?
You go down to Metro Detroit to talk to Bernie, and you interview him in the Maple Theater, which is in Bloomfield Township. Mm-hmm. It has since closed. I think about the Cherry Bowl Drive-In Theater in Honor, which is up for sale. The Elk Rapids Theater just changed owners. It feels like what you're talking about here resonates far, far beyond Marquette.
It's a very universal story. You know, you zoom out, you take the nouns out of this, and I think anybody in any community can put themselves into it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say how sad we were that we couldn't show the film, you know, at the Maple Theater. That was always something we thought actually would happen. It's the place where Bernie loved to go see movies.
The filmmaking team on this project is based entirely in Traverse City, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And TC has, you know, the State Theater, the Bijou Theater, both open to moviegoers, specifically moviegoers. They've not been repurposed. We've also seen the Traverse City Film Festival, though, scale back its sort of main event in the summertime to a series of Tuesday night films. So when you look at the landscape here in our little corner of northern Michigan, how are we doing? Diagnose us.
Well, doctor?
Well, I guess I'm feeling pretty great and optimistic right now. The Alluvion was packed and sold out. People came that had never been there before. We went recently to Rich Brower's premiere of his film at the Old Town Playhouse. Again, two back-to-back sold-out screenings. Our friend John Paul Morris and the Loud Brothers packed out the City Opera House. So we know that the local filmmaking community here is connected and that there are spaces that are welcoming us and wanting to see this kind of thrive. And I think everybody's excited that we have those opportunities here. The state is so iconic. You know, we would love to play there and we tried very hard to do that. But it's something that is difficult for them because they're operating as well as a commercial theater and they're a single screen. So,
and if we're thinking about the state of how things are, you know, I, like Joe said, I think things are pretty decent, but the way that going forward, you're going to get people to come out it's about more than a movie, and it's not always being like, you know, community, but it's about the experience from the moment you walk in the door to the moment you leave. If you can somehow make it memorable in a way that's not just what was on the screen, if I can watch something on my couch, tell me why I want to come out to it. And you can say, well, you should. Well, I think that if we all look into the presentation a little bit, we can figure something out.
And we're trying to make this fun because we know what a big deal it is for people to come out. So we're doing silly things at every screening.
We've got a lot of costumes that we're shuffling through. So
I think about when the new round of Star Wars movies came out, and I couldn't recount the plot of the first batch of the first one of those. What I do remember is being in a full theater, jammed into the back row because it was the ticket we could get, and the whole theater bursting into applause at the start of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Star Wars. I could get teary because I remember standing in line for that movie as a kid, and I'm going to play Marquee Town at that same theater down in Holland, the Park Theater. That's the one for me that, you know, I'm getting choked up now because I love that place so much.
You have more screenings coming up. What do you hope people take away or take with them as they're walking out of those screenings at the end?
Well, we are so grateful. We actually found out this morning we've sold out all three of our Traverse City shows. So the next one at the first historic theater that we're going to is the Vogue in Manistee. And we promise you that we've done everything humanly possible to make it entertaining and not academic. You will be surprised, I think. You'll be amused. And then I think at the end, what we'd love is if you left feeling as if that was time worth spending with the other people in your community. And that's really important to us. And the theaters as hosts could not have been more supportive. They're rallying their troops. We're rallying our troops and trying to pull people along that maybe haven't gone to a movie in real life in a very long time. And that's okay. If you come out for this one, we really, really genuinely think you'll have an interesting experience, especially as Michiganders, because it's just a crazy Michigan story. And we have a lot of them here, but, you know, you'll particularly enjoy knowing something about this Upper Peninsula empire that you probably never heard of.
Joe Beyer, Jordan Anderson, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
And congrats on the film.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Marquee Town has a number of showings around the region, including in Manistee, Harbor Springs, and Frankfort. You can find details at iprnews.org.
the Up North Lowdown. We'll be right back.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
What makes me happy about IPR is the people on both ends of the equation. Everybody who works here and everybody who's listening.
Katie Schlomer, Operations and Engagement Director at Interlochen Public Radio.
When fund drives are underway, I get to do all of the fun behind the scenes, organizing, and I coordinate with our staff the different challenges and opportunities that listeners have to help raise money for the station. We do what we call the pre-drive huddle, and it's sort of like a pep rally. My favorite part is when we all take turns talking about what we love that has been happening at the station or that we know is going to start happening at the station. It's super inspiring, and it always makes me excited to share it with listeners.
Give online in support of IPR and the Up North Lowdown at interlochenpublicradio.org. Thanks.
All right, Max Copeland, we are back here on the Up North Lowdown, and we have, naturally, more stories to share, right?
Yes. Storytelling, drama, action, good versus evil, that is professional wrestling in Kalkaska. Fans flock to the Coliseum to see Mr. Chainsaw Professional Wrestling, which attracts talent from Michigan and beyond. For the fans, it is entertaining, but for the wrestlers, it can be so much more than that. IPR's Tyler Thompson takes us there.
It's a rainy Saturday night in Kalkaska. Inside the Coliseum Rec Center, wrestler Aaron O'Ryan is about to defend his championship belt against a wrestler called the Relentless Barbie, Ray Larson. Larson makes her way to the ring. She's pumping up the crowd and throwing high fives. It's the first time in MCPW's history that a woman has challenged for the championship. Emotions are high as her opponent makes his appearance. Aaron appears stoic and wide-eyed. As he struts to the ring, he points to a kid holding up a sign with his name on it. And then, the match begins. Aaron O'Ryan is from Flint, born and raised. We caught up after the match, and he told me he's been wrestling since he was 15.
I don't remember a time where I didn't love wrestling.
He and a friend wrestled wherever they could, on trampolines, in the yard on a mattress, and eventually in the ring for a smaller backyard wrestling company.
We got to the point where we got 17, 18 years old, and we wanted to like pursue it professionally. So we went to like an actual wrestling school and got trained, and then that's kind of what led us here.
But the person outside of wrestling, Aaron Richard, gravitated toward other careers. He got a job in the auto industry.
I kind of got to this point where I was like, man, like, I feel like something's missing in my life.
So Aaron dropped everything and joined the Army. After 5 years of that, he came back to his old job and started to really pursue wrestling. Eventually, he was making a living just off wrestling, working countless shows. He even wrestled for WWE.
Everything's going great, and like, a lot of sweet stuff. And then pandemic hit, everything kind of went down. My son was diagnosed with brain cancer around this time too. So it was like COVID and his stuff. Wrestling really died down. There's just so much going on. So it was hard to mentally keep up with those things.
That led Aaron back to an engineering job in the auto industry. Times were hard, but his love for wrestling never waned. When he was younger, he dreamed of wrestling for Mr. Chainsaw Pro Wrestling in Kalkaska. So being here, it means a lot.
It's probably my favorite place, or top, I'm going to say top three, I'd even say top two, of like the most magnetic fan interactions and like the community up here is just so much more involved and like passionate. They're invested in who you are. They're invested in how you perform.
And hey, he's the defending champion.
I feel like I haven't missed a show in years at this point. Yeah. Even with all the stuff going on with my home life and my, you know, regular life, there's just like, I can always look forward to coming here and knowing that we're going to have a great show in store. I'm going to have a great match. And then that we're going to have a great crowd.
His family also loves being here.
They don't give a damn about watching wrestling on TV, but the second that they have the opportunity to come to a show, they love it. They get like they go to school, they can't wait to bring their friends. They like, can you go pick these guys up for the show and I can come watch you? And like, it's just, it's so different than watching it.
Mr. Chainsaw Pro Wrestling started in 2007 by the one and only Mr. Chainsaw, or Mikey Zero. He wanted to bring high quality wrestling to his hometown. Friend and showrunner Michael Z from Ann Arbor has been there every step of the way. Z says Zero gives them a lot of freedom to put on a great show.
This may be a little insular, but I don't want to present what is considered small town wrestling. I want to give them very high quality shows that like the ones they'll see on AEW or Ring of Honor. I want to bring that to the small town.
It gives the wrestlers something they can be proud of from their time in Kalkaska. And listen, the fans love it. They interact with the talent. They cheer through the big moments. They wince at the tough ones. And they even cheer for Gary the referee. And there are quieter moments. Fans were gripped during Aaron O'Ryan's championship title defense against Ray Larson. And even though O'Ryan ended up pinning Larson, the fans showed a ton of admiration for her performance.
It's special. And I've jumped out of helicopters. I have done a lot of really, really cool things. And nothing compares to even that moment where Ray Larson hit me with a Samoan drop. And the crowd is just going bananas. And I'm laying on the ground, trying to catch my breath, and just being like, this is special. Even in that moment, you're like, man, this sucks. I hate that just happened to me, but like you can feel it. You can feel like the energy from the crowd, and like even just like on the entrance and here at Chainsaw, it's very special. Like the fans here are beyond passionate.
That is professional wrestling in Kalkaska.
That story from IPR's Tyler Thompson. Aaron O'Ryan defends his belt again on May 11th at the Coliseum in Kalkaska. All right, let's find out what else is news in Michigan this week. Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed bills to lift Michigan's ban on the use of paid pregnancy surrogates. We were one of the first states to outlaw paid surrogacy contracts. That was in 1988, and now Michigan is the last state to allow it. Whitmer says in vitro fertilization with surrogates has become a common way for infertile and LGBTQ people to have children. Opponents say the laws were well-intentioned, but leave open the risk of exploitation.
Nurses are going on strike in Sault Ste. Marie. They are planning a 5-day strike starting April 15th. The union says it's tried 13 times to reach a deal with My Michigan Health. The nurses want competitive wages, more paid time off, and better health care premiums. My Michigan Health emailed a statement to WCMU Public Radio denying allegations of unfair labor practices and saying that hospital services will remain available during the strike.
The region's largest school district got a couple extra days off this week, but not because of snow. Traverse City area public schools shut down on Monday and Tuesday because of a cybersecurity issue. The district said it had experienced a network disruption. The closure effectively made spring break a couple days longer for the thousands of students who attend TCAPS. Classes resumed on Wednesday.
Researchers at the University of Michigan Biological Station have a contest every year to try and guess when the ice will melt on Douglas Lake. And this year, it happened earlier than ever. On March 16th. Now, they have been tracking this for 90 years. The mild season is blamed on climate change and El Nino. That's when warmer Pacific waters affect global weather. Now keep in mind, this lousy ice season is in Pelston, which is sometimes called Michigan's icebox. Pelston recorded the coldest temperature ever recorded in Michigan back in 1933, when the thermometer dropped to, and I have trouble even imagining this, minus 53. And that's it for the Up North Lowdown this week. We had contributions from Michael Livingston and Tyler Thompson. Over the last year, we've had contributions from Izzy Ross,
Ellie Katz,
Dan Wanchura,
Kate Botello,
Amanda Sewell,
Keith Brown,
Patrick Shea,
Max Howard,
and so, so many others.
This podcast is made at Interlochen Public Radio by me, Max Copeland.
And me, Ed Ronco.
And it's possible because of you. We are doing our spring fund drive right now, and we'd welcome your support at interlochenpublicradio.org. Thanks for listening over the past year. We look forward to bringing you many more episodes in the year ahead.
But for now, we'll just say,
have a great week.
The Legend of Zelda series boasts some of the most beloved scores in gaming history, with melodies that are woven into the fabric of video game culture. We'll explore iconic themes through the sounds of orchestras, brass ensembles, jazz and funk grooves, and more. That's this week on Gameplay. I'm Keith Brown. Join me. You can stream full episodes of Gameplay on demand and view playlists at gameplayshow.org.